Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are now tuned in to The Pastor Spot, a radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. My name is Terry Tackett. I'm your announcer for the evening, and I'll turn it over now to Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Pastor.
Hi, Terry. Thanksgiving is coming up here real shortly, isn't it?
Yes.
2 days?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Boy, and it's early this year, so it doesn't quite seem like time for Thanksgiving yet, but you know what? We'll take it. Again, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker. I am the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. We are at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our service times are on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning for Sunday school and Bible study. Worship hour is at 10:30. We have an evening service at 6:30 along with youth group at 6:30. And we also have midweek Bible studies. And every Tuesday, every other Tuesday, the first and third Tuesdays actually of the month, we have at 6:30 in the evening, we have Team Kid for everyone to bring their kids and leave them there from 6:30 to 8. And they have a great time. It's a great kids club. Matter of fact, it'll be tonight right after the show, so I'm going to have to skedaddle back there. Hey, if you'd like to call in, we'd like to hear from you tonight. Any questions, even if you have maybe a prayer request, we'd be glad to take it. But God bless you guys, and let's get ready for Thanksgiving in a good way. Well, Terry, I want to give you a little bit of update. I talked to my sister in California, and she is now staying in a camper. So she has a camper to stay in. She's no longer in the tent city at Walmart. And I do believe that her daughter also has found a place to stay. The most devastating thing she's dealing with right now is, as the list continue to come out of the victims, more and more people that she knows she's finding are no longer here. And it's really... she told me the other day, she said, we're just all in a fog around here. You know, it's just so surreal that not only do you lose everything, but, you know, you lose all you these people you know, too, that you won't, you know, and it's very difficult. But, you know, she's a trooper. She trusts God. She's going to be one that's out there being a helper, not someone looking for as much help as she is, even though she has nothing. She is going to be trying to help people. I just know that's her nature and what she'll be doing. But and still, you know, Thanksgiving coming up, think about that one. We got Thanksgiving in 2 days. Most people are frustrated because the stores are so packed. She's living in a place where there's nowhere to go. And there's not really anything open. There is a Walmart out there. That's it. And, you know, it's just very difficult. There's nothing in around the Paradise area that's even left. And good parts of Chico also are that way. So it's going to be a difficult time. But you know what? I believe a lot of people out there are so thankful for their lives. And because when it comes down to it, that's what's most important. We have our life. We have that chance to continually be the person that God made us to be. Why we go through these things, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why we go through some of the trials, but I know that James tells us to count it all joy when you go through various trials, because these are the very trials that will make us strong for tomorrow, that will make us mature us in hardness and make us the kind of Christian that we need to be as we trust in the Lord each and every day. And I've learned that personally in my life, that as I've gone through trials, I've come out of them stronger than when I went into them. I'll be honest with you, I have never gone through a trial as in losing everything. But something interesting, I think the Lord has prepared me through my life to not to worry so much about stuff, that I could probably deal with it easier than I could have 20 years ago. And that's something I want to talk a little bit about tonight, is stuff and no stuff. You know, George Carlin used to always talk about, where's all the stuff? Do you remember that comedy skit? Where's everything go? You know, where's my stuff and your stuff? It disappears. And, you know, he said, are we going to get to heaven and we find these great big piles of stuff? You know, all your stuff is up there. Because stuff just disappears, doesn't it? And sometimes we have so much stuff, we don't know where any of our stuff is. My wife always tells me, every time you need a tool, you go get more stuff. And it's been, and then you find it, and before you know it, you have 16 screwdrivers exactly alike. And not everyone can do that. Not everywhere is it like that. So it's kind of ridiculous in a way that we do some of those things. I talked the other day a little bit about being in Bolivia, and I was in a place called Bahia Negra, which was very, very deep in the Bolivian jungle. We left the city, which by our standards here would be primitive, and we left the city and flew in a single-engine plane a couple hours over the jungle until we landed in a place called Santa Corazon, and where we landed was in a cow field. The pilot had to do a couple loops to scare the cattle off the pasture so we could land the plane and that kind of thing, you know. And it was very primitive, but then we went on from there to this village that was called Bahia Negra. Now, in Santa Corazon, they had a generator, and they could fly fuel in for that. And the church there, which was nothing more than the center of it, was a mud hut, and then it had a big, like a pole building roof, a metal roof covering it for, so it was pretty modern church. No sides, just a roof covering. And to them, that was modern. But they had some electricity in there, and it would work. I think they had it for 2 hours a day, as long as they were allowed to run the generator. But most people in the village had nothing. And so that was considered some modern stuff right there. And it was just very, very primitive. I know the bathroom that we used, we actually had a bathroom we could use, but it was pretty neat. The water ran from the river, and it ran through a series of tubes that would run it uphill and downhill and uphill and downhill until it would get enough momentum to get up into the top of the tank in the top of the bathroom. And that's where the water was. So there was no electricity and pumps or anything like that. And you might just sit down in the toilet and see a spider the size of your leg, too. It just, you know, it was pretty odd in there. And I didn't go there in the middle of the night. But anyway, we get out into this little jungle. We go out into the jungle to this town called Bahia Negra. Now, in Bahia Negra, there's nothing. You know, we don't have electricity. We don't have phone. No phone cell service whatsoever, anything like that. And they lived in grass huts like you'd see in the movies. Actually, it was kind of a lot like what we'd see in the old movies from early in the 30s and 40s, where they'd be in a jungle and they'd be filming there. And the native tribes, very, very similar to that. With the exception of a lot of the people had actual clothing, only because when we donate clothing here in America, the stuff that's not that they don't use to resell back in the stores is bundled up together, and they do airdrops in different parts of the world, and go into an area and they'll just drop a bundle of clothes and people sort through them, and to them that is easier than making something. They don't have anything to make it on or make it with. It would have to be something primitive. So they wear some pretty odd clothing. You know, that whatever they can find, whatever they can, you know, make work. But, you know, in looking at that and seeing those people, I'm thinking about us in America. And I look at them and I see these people that had nothing. Zilch. They really didn't. Washing clothes in the river every day. They carried water from the river. Their stoves were made out of mud. They had a little mud stove out in front of their hut that was literally made out of mud and rocks, and that's what they cooked on. And they were exposed to the elements. I mean, if a storm came, you better hope it didn't blow the village away. And it was just that way. But there was something very interesting, Terry, very interesting about these people. As hard as they had it, and they had no modern conveniences. If they didn't catch fish in the middle of the night, the guys would go out and walk the rivers at night, and by starlight they would catch fish and spear them that were just sitting in the small streams. That was their main diet. And then out in the jungle they had some corn and some patches of that nature. They would bring stuff back into the village. And then, of course, they had gardens, too, that they grew from. But they basically had nothing. But they smiled continually. They smiled continually. And they look at us with this big, you know, some of them only had a couple teeth left in their mouth, but just grinning from ear to ear.
That led me to the question I was going to ask. I was going to ask them, how were they spiritually? I mean, even though they really didn't have anything, did they ever seem to waver? I mean, as far as, are they always, I mean, were they happy about the church? I mean, was that kind of their?
No, it was. The thing about them was.
I don't know what the word is I'm
was,
looking for, but that's.
The thing about them was they were in that area. You know, that whole part of South America, coming up through South America, when Spain conquered and came in and forced the church throughout South America, they had a background of. There's Catholicism there, you know, there's churches all through South America. But there's also, those people, for the most part, their jungle religion was animism. They worshipped animals and spirits and things like that. So most of the religion today in that area is a combination of animism and Catholicism. Interesting combination, right? So they believe in a little of both. And they believe very heavily in spirits. There's one tree that is a huge, you know, a banyan tree. You've probably seen those. Like there's some in Florida. It's a tree where all the branches, the branches grow down and then into the ground, and it just looks like a bunch of arms coming off the tree. You ever seen that?
Yeah.
They call that a spirit tree.
Okay.
And they believe those they're spirits that hang out there and control that. And they believe a lot of things. Like, for instance, there was a man that lived in the village that they found dead on one of the paths. I don't know how he died, but they thought he had killed himself. And because of what had happened, his house was considered possessed by spirits, and nobody was allowed to go near it or in it. So it just sat there in the village unused. And a lot of those kind of things. But as far as what we would call religion... The government had sent a lady that out to the village, very brave lady, very hardened lady, but she had been educated, and she'd been educated in the city, and she had a little building that they had made, a mortar-type building that they had made for her, and she would try to teach the kids about the Catholic Church up through third grade and some of the Spanish-type things. You know, the language and whatnot. But that was as much as it got. And she would go home every weekend and be gone. She'd get a ride. There was a guy that came out to the village, and he's the guy that took us out there. Originally, we were going to walk out, but it was just too dangerous. You know, awful lot of leopards, things of that nature that would eat you on the way out there. And it wasn't safe physically, to be honest with you. I mean, you disappear out there, you just disappeared. But anyway, this lady would be, there was a guy that was driving an old beat up, I'm thinking it was some form of a four-wheel drive vehicle that he would go back and forth and take people. And you wouldn't believe what they call a road was not a road. She would go home on the weekends, and then she would come back the first of the week. But they held a lot of respect for her. And in the absence of the village chief, each village had they actually had, in Spanish, their name for him was president. But in absence of their village president, she then stepped in as the president. And she was the one that gave us permission to go there. At the time we went there, we were the only second missionary team that had ever even attempted to go into that village. And the first team was to see if they could get permission for us to come a year later. And the president at the time gave permission, but when we finally went back a year later into the village, he was no longer there, but they wouldn't tell us where he was or what happened. And had to ask permission then. We just took some of the men in and to ask if we could come visit. We didn't want to take the women in right away because, you know, in that culture over there, rape is not a crime.
Really?
Not a crime. And... So we were very careful in that way that we knew how that was going to be. But now when I say that they smiled, it wasn't because of their faith, because we were wanting to take that faith in Christ to them. I think the reason that you were seeing a smile from them all the time is they weren't burdened down with all the stuff that we're burdened down with every day. You know, they got up in the morning and they knew what they ate every day. They knew what they were going to do every day to some extent. And they didn't have to worry about losing anything because they had nothing. Funny story, when we went back from that village, there was one of the ladies came up and they asked if, through the interpreter, if she could ride back with us with this toddler. Well, I knew the toddler had belonged to another girl that was about 13 in the community, and which was, that's very normal, because of the fact of there's no hands off in there. You know, as soon as a girl is old enough to become pregnant, she does. But anyway, she had handed off this toddler to this lady who said she was going to leave and go back and start finding her way to the city and find work and make a better life for herself. So we sure we'd take her with. So she rode along, and I said to the Bolivian missionary that was with us, I said, we got back and she just got out of the vehicle and disappeared into the dark, into Santa Corazon, which I told you was a city, but a town, but not a town, you know. And I said, how can she do that? She brought no belongings. She had nothing to trade. She just came. She goes, well, what's so odd about that? She didn't have anything where she came from. Why is she going to worry about having anything when she got here? And I thought about that for a minute. Now, you and I would never think about going 10 feet to somewhere else without having, what, got money on you, got a credit card, got clothes, got
cell
means,
phone,
place to spend the night. No. Yeah. They don't have anything.
See, now anymore, you don't want to go without your phone. You got to make sure you have your phone. And
life is something that you're happy for at the end of the day. And that you didn't get some debilitating parasite or disease or whatever. But the interesting thing that I find is these people do need Jesus. But one thing they had and obviously some of the crime and things that went on within those people was not something that would make people happier, they'd cherish and look for. But it was just the fact that they had so little that made them have a lot. And I don't know if people can understand that. We base so much of our happiness today, and that's why I wanted to bring this up, you know, during a Thanksgiving show, which this is the fact that we base so much of our Thanksgiving on what we have. And we expect to have so much. If you look at the ridge of the pilgrims, I mean, the pilgrims had nothing. They had gone through such a winter, people had died, but they knew that they still needed to thank God for what they had. We in America just cannot understand some of the poverty in other parts of the world. We are a nation that there's something about this nation that has been affluent. We feel that everyone needs to have a roof over their head. Everyone needs to live kind of like everyone else. And it's not that way everywhere in the world. We do have so much to be thankful for. But when I think about giving thanks, you know, it's one thing for me to say, yeah, I'm thankful for what I have. But in the back of my mind, I'm saying, you know, I really don't have much. You know, I need a lot. You know, I'm jealous of so-and-so. Look at that house he lives in. You know, look what he's driving. You know, if you people could see my bank account, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't know if I'm going to have a house next month. And you're all talking about being thankful, right? Yeah. The truth of the matter is, to be thankful and to give thanks takes very little. There was a lady, one of those ladies back in the jungle. I prayed for her husband as he laid in in his bed, which wasn't much of a bed either. And she said that, and through the interpreter, that he had hard-working disease. Essentially what that was, this was a 45-year-old man so crippled up with arthritis he could no longer get out of bed. But I went back and I prayed for him, and she understood what prayer was. And the next morning, even with the offer out there, I wasn't about to go out in the middle of the night in those Amazon streams and stab fish with a spear, because they asked if we'd like to go. And I thought, no, that's okay. I don't need an anaconda eating somewhere. But anyway, they did catch fish that night. And the next day, I'm over there we just stayed in a lodge that the village had that was essentially a roof with grass on top of it. It was a grass roof with these vertical posts holding it up around, and we slept under that. But she came over and she had this fish, and it was cooked in her fire, and it had great big gnarly 2-inch teeth on it. Scariest looking thing you'd ever seen. But she gave that to me in thanks for praying for her husband, and it was good. Now, that may have been the fish that she planned on eating that morning. But see, simplicity and thankfulness many times run hand in hand. What are we thankful for, and what do we have to be thankful for? If you talk to someone that's on there that has a terminal illness, is dying, they're just begging for health. They're begging for another day of health. If you talk to someone that is healthy and doesn't have any money, they're just wanting money. You know, our thankfulness changed depending on our position. But here's the whole point: it never should be. First of all, first and foremost, we need to be thankful that God sent His Son, Jesus Christ, to this earth to cover the sins of this world, so that in accepting Him and knowing Him, that we can have one day where we'll no longer worry about food or water or hunger or any of those things, or joy unspeakable. I can't wait till that day. So that's our first and foremost thing to be thankful for. And if we've gotten to that point, a lot of these other things become extremely secondary, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Let me ask you, I'm just going to toss some things out there. Are you thankful that there's a lot of churches in Marion that have an open door, that if you walked in, you could get in and out of the weather, and you could pray, you could ask for someone to pray with you? Are you thankful for the fact that there's pantries all over town this time of the year? Are we thankful for the fact that somebody is willing to clothe you if you need it? Are you thankful for the fact that this is, despite what anyone else says, this is still the land of opportunity in this country? A lot of people are hindered horribly by their early upbringing, and they begin at a very young age feeling defeated and feeling that no one loves them or no one cares about them, and they've got to hustle to make a buck, and they don't know how to get ahead without hustling. They've never felt loved. I think worse than any other time in our country's history, we have so many young people that do not feel loved. And there's no reason for that. Because I want to give you a little bit of a cure here today. Folks, start doing something very simple. Say thank you. Somebody opens the door for you, say thank you. Somebody does anything at all for you, say thank you. Tell someone to have a great day. If they say have a great day back, you say thank you. Being thankful doesn't mean we have a lot. It means we're thankful. Huge difference between what some people think. What do I have to be thankful for? Are you speaking right now? Yep, that's something you can be thankful for, because there's a lot of people that can't. We have so much to be thankful for. And here's the thing, folks. If we can get out there and we can teach our children at the youngest age, and quite frankly, they also learn by example, so you've got to accept this, that we need to be thankful at its closest, lowest common denominator. First will be the thankfulness for Christ. And then the denominator beyond that is thankful for anything and everything we have that sustains us every day, and the opportunity that we have to be somewhere, no matter where we come from. I've talked to so many people over the years that have come from so much pure obscurity, from backgrounds that were total poverty. And I look at them today, and I've known them in the past, and it's like, wow, you guys really stepped up. The point is, you don't have to stay where you are. It really doesn't matter if you've had bad parents. It doesn't matter if you grew up poor. I grew up poor. Trust me, I grew up poor. I know what it's like to be invited with high school kids to a McDonald's after a game or to something, and or just be invited out, period, and I don't know what to do, and I'm making an excuse why I can't go, because I'm the only kid there that doesn't have a nickel in his pocket, and that's the reason why I can't go. And I know that, compared to those poor people in Bolivia, didn't that just sound petty, what I just said?
Right.
But the truth of the matter is that there's all levels of I don't have, but there's something we all can have in that sharing. I think that many times some of the best places we can live are in poorer communities that don't know they're poor. In the olden days, and I hate to bring up the olden days, but I did, we didn't always know we were poor. We knew what we had.
That same line you just said right there, me and my sister talked about last week. We used Christmas time as an example. We didn't ask for a lot because we knew we didn't have a lot. So we didn't care.
But weren't you excited to see what you were going to get?
Yeah, exactly. But we knew we never took extravagant vacations because we knew we couldn't afford extra, you know. So it wasn't even part of our, you know.
You just didn't expect it. And today everyone expects to do what everyone else does.
Right.
We used to talk about, you know, there used to be one, maybe two cars per family, maximum. It was typically one.
Yeah.
But today, everyone in the family's got a car.
Oh, yeah.
This cell phone thing blows my mind. Oh, I got to tell you something interesting that happened today. Yeah. Hey, guys, this is a great thing that really happened. It's a new program the schools are doing.
Yeah,
we were talking about that earlier, Terry.
Yeah.
It is, and I participated today. It's called the Great Shake. And I was invited as a pastor to come to Elgin School, along with other community leaders and people that came from all over. We had the owner of Lynch's supermarket, some people from the electric cooperative, one of the ladies from Mike's Roofing. We had people from all over the place come. And McDonald's representatives were there. But anyway, what it's about, the reason it's called the Great Shake is we took the fifth grade, the whole fifth grade, and set up the gymnasium at 12 different stations. And we were judges at those stations, and the kids would come to our station one at a time, and each station had a different area that they would ask this child about or something they needed to do. And the Great Shake came from the fact that the first thing they're supposed to do is come up and say, "Hi, my name's so-and-so," and shake your hand. And that's where it comes from. And then they are to try to dress as well as they can, keep good eye contact. The whole thing is teaching them to be leaders. And you begin asking them questions. And it was a two-day competition. And you ask them about each station was different subjects. Today, the kids that were left over from yesterday, the ones that had moved on at our particular station, got to be the president. And we, as a press corps, there were about five of us there, got to continually ask them questions. But the neat thing that I guess is what I'm getting at is that, you know, we always complain about no one knowing anything, having anything, doing anything. These kids renewed my faith in kids because it was amazing. They all knew quite a bit about most of the subjects, which honestly surprised me, especially one of the science subjects I asked them about. There was not one kid in the fifth grade that didn't know about...
And you said the subject they hadn't learned for, like, what, 2 months?
2 months, it was on the food web,
which
is not a food chain, is broader than a food chain. And so that was what I needed to ask them the first day. And every kid in the grade knew it to a certain level. They all had a grasp of what it was. And I have to commend the teachers for that, and the students and their parents. But today it was interesting. We were asking questions about, one of the questions that we had to ask the kids was, as we were interviewing the president, right, like you're in a press room, you know, Madam President, what do you think about technology today and where is it going and do we have too much of it, was one of the types of questions. And it was amazing. Almost every one of those kids, when we talk about technology, would say, technology is good, but we've got too much today. They'd say, you know, I think we need to learn to put our cell phones down and talk back and forth more on a personal level and learn to interact more and not just be on the phone. These are fifth graders saying this stuff. And I'm like, yay! And one of the questions I asked is, do you think that it should be a policy that when you come to school you put down your phone? That there's no phone in the school. And this young lady spoke right up, and I don't remember exact words, but it was like, absolutely. You know, we don't need to be looking at our phone and being distracted in school by a phone. So these are kids doing something that parents can't even get accomplished.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all these things we think we need, even the kids understand we don't.
That's awesome.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And we were asking the kids today about testing. How do you feel about, we're constantly testing in the schools today. Test. You know, the teachers are teaching to test. What do you think of that? Should students be moved on, promoted through tests, or through the opinion of a teacher that understands the students involved. And we got such interesting comments. Most students thought that it should be a combination of some testing and the experienced teacher that knows that student deciding if they're ready to move on or not.
Yeah.
And I thought, fantastic. Yeah. Hey, State Department of Education, listen to these kids. You know, they got their feet in.
Absolutely.
So there's something I'm thankful for. Mm-hmm. I truly am. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to another lady today that told me about how her family hadn't been in church, but she really wanted to see her kids have that exposure. And she was talking about it. She said, if we don't expose our kids to God, it's not fair, because they're getting the other side of it their entire life. And if they're going to make a decision, they need to hear about God. And I thought, absolutely. And I'm glad to hear parents say those kind of things. So those are some of my Thanksgiving thank yous. But we don't always have to be thankful because we've got the big screen TV, or we've got the most channels, or we've got the newest and latest phone. I think those things are imposters for happiness. They don't really give us happiness. They give us a momentary thrill. A momentary, oh, that's great. It's kind of like that first bite of a big piece of cheesecake.
Uh-huh.
And by the time you get to the 20th bite, you feel like you're going to explode and it doesn't taste nearly as well.
Right.
And we have so much of that. But just being thankful. Start at home, folks, with your kids, and teach them to say thank you. Teach them to be thankful for little things. Teach them in a conversation in your home that when someone does something for you, or when someone, to say thank you, I appreciate that. When you compliment them, they don't need to just look at you, they need to say thank you.
Most importantly, make them part of the conversation.
Say that again, you were kind of quiet there, buddy.
Allow them to be part of the conversation. Especially now with the holidays coming, include them in the conversation.
Which conversation?
Any
conversation.
Because obviously your experience, they got their feet entrenched in a lot of different things.
Hey, these kids are on it, man, I'm telling you.
So anymore, I don't think any subject's off limits.
Well, I think to a point it is. I think that when we talk about...
Mortality
and sexual stuff.
Right,
we got age limits.
Leave
yeah.
that, you know,
But anything
general
else.
General conversation.
What do you think about...
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with mom and dad sitting down with you.
Yeah.
Sit down with your kids and say, kids, everyone's talking about this border situation.
Yes.
What do you think?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And let's talk about this.
Yes. What's your feelings on...
Whatever.
Yeah.
And let me tell you where I am from an adult and where I see it. And give credence to what they say.
And the main thing, listen.
And don't say, oh, you're just stupid, or you've never lived there, or you're not as old as me.
Listen.
Let it be let me explain to you my experience.
Exactly.
And I want to help you understand.
Yes.
But I respect what you're saying to me. And there's so much, there's not the interaction we used to have with our parents and with kids. And something interesting those kids said today, too, which was really odd. This little girl's talking, and to openly admit it and come out like this, when I was talking about the technology, and this little girl happened to be Madam President that we were interviewing at the point.
Okay.
And she said, I really think that we need to put our technology down. She said, because my brothers come home, they go to their room, and they don't even know what it's like to play outside anymore. Folks, this was an 11-year-old.
So if she sees it...
Yeah, this is an 11-year-old talking about being frank. She didn't even know the question that was going to be asked.
But I'm thinking, how many times do we see that?
Exactly. And mom and dad, if you're listening out there, grandma and grandpa, guardian, whatever you are, put this stuff into action. They might scream for a minute, but put limits on it. It was really funny. This one little girl was talking, it might have been that same girl, was talking about how all of her friends have cell phones, and they're always on cell phones. And it just is probably not so healthy. And everyone in the class is that way. And I couldn't speak up and say anything, but I thought to myself, I know of at least one that's not. My grandson, Jack, is in that same grade at that school. And my grandson, Jack, does not have a phone. And mom and dad said, you're not old enough. You don't need a phone. You've got stuff to do. And last weekend was the opening of youth hunting on Saturday. And
did he pass his registration course?
Oh, he did. And you know, Jack
was.
His
dad was making him take that.
Oh yeah. And on Friday nights, when he finally passed it, and he was sitting at my house, he then come over and using the computer at our house. And when he got through, there were what did he tell me? There were 80 questions at the end. That it was a compiling of all the things they'd gone through, and they had to score. I don't remember what they had.
So he was being graded on these questions.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, okay. And this is a state test.
Okay.
So when he finally got it all done and entered all his answers and I hit review, it came back, he got a 95%. And I heard this war whoop out in the kitchen. And he was excited, man, I'm telling you. But because the
Has he taken him out yet?
That was the next morning. Okay, but he would not take him out had he not done that.
Right.
But what was really neat was, what a father and son bonding time the next day with those boys.
Yeah.
And uncles and cousins and folks, if you don't, I know some people don't like to hunt, don't see the point in it. A lot of people grew up doing it.
Sure.
I know that my extended family, they're the kind of people, if they shoot it, they eat it. You know, none of this is sport stuff. You know, and quite frankly, it supplements their family. They're not the guys going out buying $200 hunting vests and $1,500 shooting rifles. They're the guys that have the basic necessities and are going out there legally and procuring game for their family.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's that bonding time. It's that time together. You know, maybe you want to go out. Another daughter of mine, she and her husband, they're not hunters. They don't, you know, they don't do any of that. But you know what they do? They go out and they hike with their kids. They go out to metro parks on the weekends, and they walk and they hike and they go to different places. And the kids get such a broad education. Do you know if you're out there today and you're dead broke, let me tell you how much it costs to take your kids to Tall Grass Trail and take a walk. Zero. And there's so many of these parks around that you can go to. For crying out loud, go over to Ollie's. I saw at Ollie's the other day. They had a pretty decent set of binoculars in there for $6. Go get those $6 binoculars and go out to the wetland area. That's out north of Marion.
Kildeer, whatever.
Yeah. And go out there on some of those end roads and let them watch some of the amazing wildlife. You'll see bald eagles. You'll see hawks. You'll see great blue herons. All these things. And people say, my kid's not going to do that. Have you tried?
Yeah. I know in the summertime, that was some of the best fishing out there, with some of them ponds.
Oh, sure.
Oh, my.
You don't have to spend a fortune to have fun anymore.
Your
kids might kick and scream at first,
yeah.
But that's only because they haven't experienced it.
Right.
And once they start experiencing it, it's like...
You don't want to go more often, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When I ask my grandkids what they want, my grandkids that hunt, when I ask them what they want for birthday, Christmas, it doesn't matter what it is. I don't hear an iPhone this or that. What I hear is, I need some new hunting boots. You know, I need this, I need that, I need a vest. I need, you know, it's all those, because those are things that mean something to them. They keep them all year long, and they go out many times with no firearm whatsoever, or no bow and arrow, or anything like that. And they just go out, and they walk, and they become one with nature and love what they do. So these are things we can be thankful for. Families, please, stop making your lives so complicated. You know, Team Kid is something we'll have tonight at the church. And like I said earlier,
if you're looking for something to do.
There you go. First and third Tuesday of the month, 6:30 in the evening, Community Christian Fellowship. You bring your child from age 3 all the way up through 5th grade and register them at the door. They'll have a time where they have learning and snacks and crafts.
They're going to feed them.
You come back at 8 o'clock and pick them up. You're welcome to stay if you'd like. A lot of parents do the first time. But there's something that at least two nights a month, you know, Tuesday, and then in 2 weeks it'll be Tuesday again, that they can do. And it's good for their kids. Gives mom and dad a chance to go to the store. We're at 209 East Water Street, and just bring them and come. Don't worry. I don't care. We don't care what denomination they are. We don't care if they've never been to church. Bring your kids and expose them to something good, and it costs you nothing. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So there's these things out there, so we do have things to be thankful for. We just got to take part in them And I was grown up. One thing my parents would never buy from me, I didn't say buy for me, was buy from me. And that was a woe is me attitude. It wasn't going to fly in my house.
Right.
You start whining around and moping around, you're usually going to get a good swat and put outside, kind of like a dog that won't behave. But no, my point is that it was, look, there's all these things out there. There's all things you can do. Quit whining around. And they didn't tolerate that attitude. It was one of the best things they ever did. My brother and I, like I said, we were poor. My brother and I used to make clothespin dolls. We would take the, you know, the old clothespins, not the snap kind, but the kind that had the round head and you just slid over stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we'd draw faces on that round head. My mom would give us yarn. We'd make hair. We'd take material, make clothes for them. And we'd make armies of people. We did all kinds of stuff that way. What kid out there hadn't made a bow and arrow out of sticks? And all those kind of things we did, we learned to entertain ourselves, but it also gave us imagination, creativity, right? Mm-hmm. I watched my grandsons. They were out playing a couple weeks ago at my house, and they're running around and yelling and carrying on and out in the yard and just having a ball. And I look out the window, and every one of them is chasing the other one with a big stick. And it's just what they do.
Yeah.
And they were having fun doing it. And, you know, the point is that that's something to be thankful for. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it is.
Yeah.
Be thankful for teachers that are willing to do those programs like we did today.
Yeah.
Be thankful for the teachers that will go to these learning places to learn this stuff and bring back to further their education and do that. You know, be thankful for people that are willing to have a team kid that aren't getting paid, and they come and want these kids to come up and to give them better lives and give them something to do and to give mom and dad a break. You know,
I thought a cool thing today was a lady that I work with said she was leaving work. She said her son's teacher had called her. I guess they had so many people donate Thanksgiving meals, they had a bunch left over.
Not a blessing.
And the teacher asked if they would be interested in having one, you know, because...
Isn't that great?
Yeah, so she said, you know, I mean, it's just her working right now. Her husband, you know, got injured, but... And she thought, yeah, that'd be, you know, it's a great idea. So they're going to get it, turkey and potatoes and the whole nine, you know, and...
Yeah, you know, those things...
I thought that was pretty neat, you know, that...
Before I came up here tonight, I dropped off a turkey to a lady that needed one. She's in her 80s, and she can't do much, but she has her kids in for the holiday. And I dropped a turkey off to her. She had called and said, asked if we could. And I'm so thankful to be able to do that. And it wasn't my turkey. It was God's turkey.
Yeah.
You're going to say, what do you mean by that, Pastor? Everything God gives us comes from Him, everything that we have. And many times He gives us so that we can give to others and do those things.
Sure.
And that brings joy. It brings great joy in your life. Maybe this Thanksgiving, the thing that you can say is, the thing I'm most thankful for this Thanksgiving is that I am able to give something to someone else.
Absolutely.
You know, and if we did more of that,
yeah.
I mean, we start seeing kindness, not people... ready to take your head off. Something interesting, real quick. I know I only got a minute left. One of the questions we asked these kids is they were pretending to be president today. And we asked the question, some people asked the question, what's the main important thing in this country that you would change right now? And you know what the answer commonly was? People need to stop hating each other. This is from kids, folks. Teach them to be thankful. Be thankful for what you have. Change the situation you're in when you can do it. You know, begin to climb up. You got to look up to get out. You know, you got to look up if you're going to go up. You can't look down and go up. God bless you guys. I hope to see you in church on Sunday. This is Pastor Steve Whitaker. I'm out.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LPFM, Marion, Ohio, the place for the